Hello, hello, Aaron Campbell.
How's it going?
Super successful Aaron Campbell.
Yeah, right.
That's what they call you. They call you the outlier.
No. I have been on my grind recently.
Yeah? What do you mean by that?
I've just been grinding. I've been working hard just every day, you know, from early in the morning to late at night. And,
And that's the secret to your success?
I'm just trying to pay the rent and, you know, make good things happen in the world.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, today we're talking about you know, outliers, people who fall outside the norm on the higher end of the range of, you know, super successful people, the Steve Jobs, the Bill Gates, the Beatles, rock stars, professional athletes, and what separates them from all the other talented people who don't make it.
Right.
And, you know, in this month's story, we talked about the 10,000 hour rule,
right?
That seems to be that everyone needs a base level of talent. If you want to be successful, you gotta work hard and you got to be talented. But, there's a distinction between not just working hard, but putting in the hours.
Right. Well, yeah, it's working hard. It's putting in the hours. But doesn't it also have to do with working smart, though? I mean, just because you work hard and you're talented doesn't necessarily mean you're going to make the kind of progress that you want unless you're working in an efficient way or a smart way, or you have some coaching, or, I mean, that's just the way I take it, you know?
You know, that seems logical.
Yeah.
But at least the study by this guy, Erickson, I think his name was, what he found was, it wasn't necessarily that these violinists were practicing in any different way or more concentrated way.
Yeah. They were just talented, and it was the amount of hours. Yeah.
His analysis was, to get into this elite level school, you had to have a base level of talent.
Okay.
So everybody was talented.
Everybody was talented.
But who were the superstars that objectively other professors would say they're way
the
better?
Yeah.
They had more hours.
Right.
It wasn't necessarily they could find anything different about their practice habits, but the amount.
Just the amount of time.
But I don't know. It would make sense that the kind of practice you're doing would be important. I mean, certainly in learning language, there are efficient uses of time and inefficient uses of time.
Sure. Yeah. For example, I mean, you could spend years learning all the vocabulary that is non-frequently used in the English language is not really going to help your fluency so much.
Or conversely, you could learn all these grammar rules, but you don't have a wide enough range of words.
So
certainly you need to know where to focus. And I think that probably the type of practice needs to be done with like a high level of awareness, because you can work in kind of a spaced out, unfocused way.
Sure. One of the things I was thinking about, this 10,000 hour rule, I was wondering, like, how many hours actually is that in terms of our, you know, daily rhythms and patterns? And, some simple math, you can take it. If you work a 40-hour week, if you focused on something for 40 hours, and let's say you worked 50 weeks out of the year, you took a couple of weeks off here and there or a couple of days off here and there, you know, you'd rack up about 2,000 hours, close to 2,000 hours in 1 year.
2,000
maybe a little
in a year.
Under, yeah,
okay.
About 2,000. So it would take 5 years of full-time, you know, focus on something to actually get to a level that you were either masterful or very, very good at what you're doing.
So that would mean
that
you could not have another job. You couldn't have a job or a family and expect to reach mastery in 5 years.
No, but you could have a family and a job. And if you were able to find 20 hours a week of your, I mean, just like if you work nights or you focus and you find that time, in 10 years, you could actually change careers.
Yes.
You could become something completely different than you are. Yeah.
But, you know, if you've got a family and another job, that's an incredible effort.
Yes.
But for an incredible result to master something.
Sure. Yeah. It's a heroic effort. Yeah.
But that's actually one of the points that Malcolm Gladwell makes in his book is that, you know, the opportunity to put in those hours just is not there for people who don't have you know, well off backgrounds.
Sure. They don't have access to resources. They don't have the money to pay for coaches or to put them in schools where they're going to have this kind
of opportunity. Or to, you know, to go to take these violinists, you know, the ones who are were putting in 10,000 hours by the age of 20.
Yeah.
Certainly they did not have jobs in high school.
No.
Or there's no way they could have gotten those hours together. Sure. And in university, they probably didn't have jobs either.
Sure.
Probably the ones that did were the ones that were, you know, ranked as mediocre,
right,
or just good as opposed to elite.
Right.
So, you know, the ability to be able to focus, that's like a huge gift that, society or institutions can give some people and not others.
Yeah. But you definitely have to have the talent. I just don't think you can just, for example, if you were to give me a violin and I practiced for 10,000 hours, I'd probably be like, at best, an average violinist, at best, because I just don't have the musical talent.
Yeah, I think Paul McCartney apparently bristled a little bit at the idea of this. He said, we did put in huge hours, but there's loads of bands that
they put in
10,000 hours, and they they were good, but they they weren't the Beatles.
Totally.
So certainly there's an element of luck, but I think he is on to something that that, you know, the amount of time you put into something, if you put enough time into to anything, it's inevitable that you will improve. You might not get to a level of mastery where you're like world class at something, but if you put in the hours, you can't help but improve.
Sure. And I think, you know, getting better at any kind of skill. And of course, a lot of the people listening to us talk are people who are trying to improve their fluency. They're trying to get better at speaking. They're trying to understand native speakers better. And, you know, it is a quite, you have to put in the hours. It's not something magical just because you have a good lesson or you have a good teacher or you have some good technique. You still have to consistently put in that time, and as you keep working at it, you do get better and better, and you get more and more skillful. And,
right. And I think that I think the important thing to remember is, you know, you don't need to put in 20 hours a week for 5 years.
No,
if you put in 20 hours a week for 5 years, you would be a linguist, like a professional linguist.
Right. And most people just want to get good enough.
They just want to be able to communicate and express themselves and be understood.
Yeah. And that can happen a lot faster.
So what things in your life have you put in 10,000 hours?
Oh, goodness.
Juggling, right?
What's that?
Juggling.
Yeah, juggling.
Tap dancing.
Yeah, tap dancing, juggling.
Yes. Maybe we should save that for another lesson. That's a whole nother story, the tap dancing.
The tap dancing, juggling thing?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever made a concerted effort at one thing, because I've never found, you know, like a passion towards one particular activity. I've always seen myself as more of a generalist.
I'm interested. Jack of all trades.
Yeah, a jack of all trades. It's interested in many, many different things. I think that's why I became a teacher.
Right.
Because
you like to push people around.
No, the opposite. I like to help people to find their own passions. And,
that's what
and
I
get
meant.
Them excited.
That's what I meant.
So, but no, I think I've spent the most time in the classroom and working with people.
Right.
And I've spent, lots and lots of hours, probably more than 10,000 hours in the last 15 or 20
can
years.
Can you remember your first couple of weeks in the classroom?
Yes.
Can you remember what that felt like?
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking back at that. It was just, I really feel sorry for the people that were in my class.
Everybody's got to start somewhere.
You got to start somewhere. Absolutely. But I've definitely put in more than 10 hours as a teacher.
10 hours? You put a whole 10 hours
in? Did I say 10 hours? Yeah. Okay. I put 11 hours in, Dan. No, actually, 10,000. Definitely more than 10,000.
I've certainly, you know, almost, actually, I think 20 years in some form or the other teaching. So,
I'm
about 10,000 hours.
About 20 years. So.
So I think there are some interesting implications of like how institutions are set up, and you know how the rules of institutions could possibly be changed to make it more fair, so that talented people who work hard, you know, have the chance to focus.
Yeah, especially in a society like the United States, which I think the differences between rich and poor and haves and have-nots in the developed world is much more striking than in places in Europe or here in Japan. there's so many people lack opportunity.
Yeah.
And it's just not fair.
Yeah.
And I wonder how we can, I wonder which countries do have a more level playing field that identify talent from a young age and help to cultivate that talent and support those people.
I was reading about one country, maybe Denmark, that they don't make any decisions about who is talented and who is not talented until at least 10 or 11 years old.
That makes sense.
Yeah. You know, in the US, I think as early as maybe even first grade, 6 years old,
really? Wow.
They start streaming people, at least in my elementary school, by, you know, your reading level is higher. So we're going to split you off from the grade class for the next hour, and you're going to be in this, you know, more high level. And so you're being challenged more, you're giving more attention. And then that just starts to snowball.
Yeah.
That small advantage, just like the hockey players, these kids, these bigger kids, it accumulates at a higher and higher speed.
Yeah.
Or rate.
Yeah.
So I think that's interesting to not stream kids, to not categorize a student's level until they're old enough to, you know, focus and be at a similar maturity.
Sure.
Because you know the maturity of a kid who's, you know, 6 years in a day and 6 years and 11 months can be quite different.
Yeah, it can be drastically different.
There's actually, you know, so much so that some parents hold their students back
purposely
a year, and they call it red shirting.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah, like I guess that's from soccer.
Yeah.
You know, red card.
Well, you know, like with our daughter, that really helped her. We didn't purposely do that. It just happened that she was born right at the very beginning of the school year, or just after the cutoff date. So she's like the oldest in her class. And when she competes, like in karate, for example, she's competing against people who are slightly younger than her. And naturally, I think because she's just a little bit bigger than other kids, not only because of her age, but also maybe because of her genetics.
Yeah.
And so she has an advantage.
Yeah.
And she does quite well in terms of her competition with people at the same age or the same, you know, level as her.
Yeah.
So I can see it, and it's really helped her confidence.
Yeah.
You know, she's a lot more confident because of it. So, yeah.
You know, my kid, she's the exact youngest.
Oh, she is the youngest.
She's
okay.
Born on March 31st.
Oh, wow.
And
wow.
April 1st would be the cutoff date. So she can't get any younger.
Oh, man.
And, you know, she's just in preschool now. But I went and visited, and I watched them playing some games where they were throwing these balls in a bucket. And I was just like, man, my kid, she's not even getting close. Like, I got to spend some time doing some sports with her.
Yeah, right.
I can understand some parents who decide to hold their kids back.
Sure.
How do you restructure the rules? How do you change the rules of organizations and schools and governments to make these opportunities more fair? One of the things that I've heard proposed is to get rid of summer vacation.
Ah.
You know, summer vacation, if you're from a well-off family, you're going to have all kinds of educational opportunities.
Exactly.
And if you are from a very poor family where your parents don't even have time to spend with you because they have to be working so much and they don't have time, they don't have the money to put you into educational opportunities, you're going to fall behind these other rich kids.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if I was a kid, I really wouldn't like this Gladwell character. But you know, I grew up in a middle class family, and I didn't really do much during the
summer.
So yeah, I was just playing around.
Did you go to camp? I went to camp, but
sometimes. Was it real educational?
No, not really. I mean, when I got into high school, I went to a few educational type camps, but that was just for like a week here, a week there. It wasn't like the whole summer. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So,
I mean, another issue is the high cost of higher education of universities, which cause students to have to work through university.
Oh, right.
And they don't have the time to focus on their studies and their skill development at the same level.
Yeah.
You know, of course, there are some countries, I think in Germany, where higher education is free.
Yeah.
Incredibly I've heard not even for just for citizens, also for
I think for foreign residents too. Yeah, you can go over there and get an education.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
So anyhow, how are the rules holding some people back and pushing some people forward? I think that's the main point that Gladwell wants to get at. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of a no brainer. You know, you put in more hours, there's more chance you're going to improve.
Sure.
And it's not just about putting in the hours, but it's also not just about talent. It's a mixture of preparation and then opportunity
right.
that comes along. And right. when those two things sync, then, you know,
yeah.
you can have a world-class success.
But is there such thing as too many hours? I mean, isn't it possible that you overdo it and you lose focus or you tire too easily? I mean, I would think there'd be an ideal like amount of hours in a day that where you get the maximum out of what you do, and if you go beyond that, you're not necessarily gaining anything.
Yeah,
like I'm thinking like sports practice, for example. Like my older daughter played volleyball on a kind of a very competitive traveling volleyball team, and they would on the weekends, for example, they would practice for like eight hours or 9 hours every day. They on Friday night for 4 hours and Saturday for 8 or 9 hours and Sunday for 8, like the whole day. Really, do you get more benefit out of practicing for 8 hours, or wouldn't it be better to practice less? So I just wonder if Gladwell's theory holds true in all cases, and maybe it depends on the skill being practiced. I wonder.
In sports you could overtrain. And, you know, back to what we were talking about before, you can focus on the wrong things, mm-hmm. which won't get you to your goal. It'll help you improve in that little
niche, that little aspect.
Right.
So what are you going to be focused on?
What am I going to be focused
on? In the coming years, where are you going to put all your time and effort?
I'm going to put all my time and effort into mentoring you.
Oh, great. All right.
Into how to be a better human being. Good. Not to say you're a bad human being.
Well, you know, I have a lot of improvements to make.
Yeah, and that's the kind of attitude I like.
Yeah, yeah. So you're going to mentor me.
Yes. All well, right. What about you? You going to mentor me?
I'm definitely not going to mentor you.
Well, then I ain't mentoring you either, then.
All right.
Deal's off. All right. I've had enough of this.
Okay.
All right. All right. Until next month.
All right. See ya.
Bye-bye.